Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly Movie Club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
It's Halloween still. It's not over yet. Welcome to the Cult Popture Podcast, everybody. The spookiest podcast around. Probably not, actually. But for this month, it's trying to be. My name is AJ, and I'm joined here with Richard and Jess. How are you guys? And girl.
Hello.
Guy and girl.
Hello.
I'm very good, thank you.
That's good. What's big day today?
Jinx. What is?
Yeah, not when you're listening to this, but for us recording it.
The results will be out by the time. Does that mean we're allowed to talk about the election because this is coming out after?
No.
Yeah, technically. This is the sequel, because it's a sequel podcast kind of thing, to our Land Before Time episode.
Because that was the far out. We've been doing this podcast for over one election cycle. That's pretty cool. Yeah. We're recording this the day of the New Zealand election, this isn't an international law, but it's in a national law that you're not allowed to influence someone's.
Yeah, you're not allowed
opinion.
To say anything publicly, essentially, that could influence someone's vote. So all the campaign signs have to get taken down before midnight last night, and you can't tweet about it, you can't post on.
Which is kind of dumb because we have early voting here. So
There's been a 2-week period
portion of the population already voted.
It feels very pointless.
Yeah, almost 2 million people have already voted.
Have you guys voted?
A population of 5 million.
AJ, have you voted?
Yeah, I voted 2 weeks ago.
Very good. Richard, have you voted?
Yes, I voted before you. I voted both of you.
All right.
I went on a lunch break at work and just wandered into the mall and was like, oh, I'll vote. And America's having celebrities strip naked to explain what naked balloting is and how you have to use
and being
two
like,
envelopes to send in.
Yeah, once you've waited the first 11 hours, the other 10 go right by, just stay in line.
And it's all just this complicated process, which is clearly designed so that
minorities.
People don't vote in America, whereas in New Zealand, you can wander into a mall and vote by accident.
You can literally vote anywhere. I was in Wellington, so I was voting outside of my electorate.
Yeah.
You literally
which means your
in.
Vote won't be counted for 2 weeks.
It's a special vote. Yeah. Special.
Mine was a special vote because all my addresses and stuff was wrong.
Yeah.
Are they still in Auckland?
I don't know. They just said, what's your address? And I was like, what have you got written down?
How did you know which MP to vote if you didn't even know your electorate?
They told me.
Oh. Were you just I'll go for this one?
Well, no, I know what my MP is because there's fucking billboards for her everywhere. Okay. So I'm pretty aware, but
in New Zealand, you don't even need, ID. You just rock up and they go, what's your name? And they go, this. And it's like,
where do you live? Here. And then they go on scroll down on the iPhone. They're like, oh, is this you? Yeah, click, sweet, here you go.
It's just Facebook. Is this you? Yeah. Cool. Well, hey, that's what we're excited about here in New Zealand, but we're also excited about Halloween, a holiday that New Zealand doesn't really celebrate.
Yeah. Ooh, Americanization.
This is how we celebrate it. It's by making Halloween-y content.
Yeah, it is very much Halloween is not really a Halloween is an obligation in New Zealand by retailers to be like, oh, I guess we'll fucking hang up all these pumpkins and
And like fucking shit. Sometimes there'll be house parties, but no one ever really puts in any effort.
Yeah.
There you actually can't get the pumpkin here that you make jack-o'-lanterns out of.
Mm.
It doesn't grow here.
We just have
you can't make it.
Mini pumpkins.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Our pumpkins are gross. Our pumpkins are grey in New Zealand. They are grey and you cannot carve them.
You know, I never thought about that they were grey. I never considered the exterior colour of the pumpkin.
They're a green. They're a greeny grey. Yeah, I think people gray. Probably they're argue like, they're green.
They're like you know, you get eye colour that's like that greeny grey.
Like mine.
I don't know.
I just leaned forward and knocked my microphone.
Yeah,
I was trying to show
to put
them
your
my eyes.
Eye like above the camera, so I couldn't see it.
I was trying to look into it.
I was just looking at the bags under your eyes. My God, you look tired.
So a few months ago, maybe a couple months ago, we did a podcast called "Short Films Versus Their Feature Film Adaptations," where we looked at a bunch of three. I shouldn't say a bunch. We looked at three feature length films that were based on short films that were made as sort of a proof of concept. We looked at a film called Cargo, a film called Yes God Yes, and a film called Whiplash, because they were all based on short films. And I thought this, not only was that a concept that could probably sustain an entire individual podcast on its own, it's also one we could repeat and with various themes, including the spooky theme, because probably more than any other genre, horror movies are a lot of the time based on like award-winning short films and things like that.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go through these films. We released what the films would be ahead of time, so hopefully people have watched them if they don't want spoilers, because while we're not necessarily reviewing these films, there will be talk of the ending, because one trend I've noticed in the six short films and their feature-length adaptations that we have watched so far is that the template tends to be the short film is the start and the end of the film, and the feature film is a whole lot of shit in the middle.
Yeah,
it's like, what can we add to this dump?
Yeah, not all the time, and sometimes it works to its benefit, and sometimes it ruins it. We have a pretty good slate this time round of different results from doing this sort of thing. So the films we watched were Frankenweenie, which is a 2012 short film, 2012 feature film directed by Tim Burton, who also directed a short film in 1984 of the same name, of which the feature film is based. We also watched a 2016 film called Lights Out, directed by David F. Sandberg, who directed Shazam and also directed Lights Out, a 2013 version of it. It says it's Swedish. Is David F. Sandberg Swedish?
David F. Sandberg.
I've heard him talk. He's got an American accent. What really makes you Swedish if you don't have the accent?
I mean, if you type in David F. Sandberg into Google, it says Swedish filmmaker.
Interesting. And we also watched The Babadook, which is a 2014 Australian film directed by Jennifer Kent, based on her 2005 short film called Monster. So what's interesting here is that last time we did this concept, the films were very close together. I think they were only maybe 2 to 3 years apart from each other. Whereas this time we have two examples where there's been quite a big gap. So The Babadook, there was a 9-year gap between the short and the feature, and Frankenweenie's what, a 30-year nearly 30-year gap, 28-year gap between the short film and the feature. And so we'll go through each of these one at a time, talk about what they're about, and how the process of adaptation, you know, what it looks like. So I'd love to start with Frankenweenie, if that's okay with you guys.
I'll allow it. Jess, will you allow it? Just second it?
Yes, motion passed.
Okay.
We just don't let them start with it.
Frankenweenie is probably one of the most interesting cases of this, I think, because not only is it 28 years in the making from the short film, but the short film is a live action. I think it's about 26 minutes, I think, and it's a live action thing starring Shelley Duvall and Daniel Stern, and The 2012 remake, feature film remake, is a 3D stop-motion animated film. So this is also a case where the medium changed in between the short film and the feature film. But yeah, what is Frankenweenie about? Does someone want to take on that responsibility?
Sure. So it's an adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, obviously. And it's about a boy who loses his dog. His dog dies. And he Frankensteins it into being alive again. And
he Frankenstein monsters it.
My apologies. My sincerest apologies. He Frankenstein monsters it into being back alive again. And chaos ensues. Basically, the town like hunt down the dog, and then the dog ends up saving the boy at the end, and they're like, oh, never mind, be like the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's both the short film and the feature film. The feature film just has a whole bunch of other stuff in it in between those two beats that Jess outlined, whereas the short film is basically just those two beats.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of both the short and the feature?
Loved them.
I fucking was obsessed with this. It was one of those cases where Richard was like, oh, we have to watch these movies and we'll put it on. And I was like on my phone. And then 10 minutes in, I was just so into it.
Yeah. I'd never seen this before. My main exposure to Frankenweenie was a guy I used to work with who I did not like very much. I won't say his name, but and he talked about how he came into work one day. He's like, oh, I just bought Frankenweenie. He's like, so I've seen... And he bought the Art of Frankenweenie book or whatever, and was going on about how Tim Burton's his favorite director and how he had seen every Tim Burton film. And I said, my favorite Tim Burton film was probably Big Fish, and he'd never heard of it.
It's his best film. It's easily Tim Burton's best
and,
film.
Yeah, but of course, you know, that made that was you know, because he's so much better than me, that was why he hadn't seen it. And
so I watched the short film, and I was very swept up in it. I thought it's sort of one of those films where it's like, God, imagine being the art director on this film. It's like this black and white live action thing with some very cheesy but cool scientific machines, and the dog itself is dressed up to look like he's made from a bunch of different dog parts. It's very exciting and very schlocky. Was this before Tim Burton was Tim Burton? When was Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Tim Burton filmography. I think because he was still this was my understanding was that it was film school project or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. So Pee-wee's Big Adventure was a year after this. So this is proto Burt.
Oh, good, because Paul Reuben saw Frankenweenie and chose him to direct it.
There you go.
How did he get? Freaking what's
Shelley Duvall?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And his uni film. Jesus.
No, I don't know if it was a uni film. It just it had that kind of feel.
As someone who works as a film tutor at a uni type place, this would be the best uni film I've ever seen.
Yeah, I can guarantee this wasn't made.
Because it was made by Disney.
Yeah.
Although apparently, Burton was fired after he completed the film. The original.
Wow. There you go. So it's very fun and looked like it would have been a hell of a lot of fun to make. And I was watching it and I was like, oh, is the magic of the fact that this is live action is makes it so magical, is the magic going to be lost in an animated version of this? And then immediately after I watched it, I watched the animated version and it's like, oh, I forgot how fucking entrancing stop motion animation inherently is. And I loved it. I loved the feature film as well. I thought that the beats were improved. The beats that were repeated were improved. I mean, it's black and white. The whole thing is black and white, which is so interesting for a kid's movie. It feels like such a risk. I was talking to my flatmate. Do you reckon that they made the models and everything black and white?
Yeah, I reckon everything would have been made in black and white.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, there's moments in it that you really notice the detail, the part where the fat kid is getting rocketed off the roof, and it's they shake up all these soda bottles and strap them to his back, and the way that they animate the soda bottles to be fizzy is so cool.
Yeah. And I thought that the stuff added in between the start and the end from the short film was excellent. So there's a great, I'm sure you picked up on it, but I'm sure not everyone picked up on it. But the whole thing is based around a science fair where everyone's competing for the best science project. And Victor Frankenstein, who's the main character, he's kind of he's not really interested in it because he's brought his dog back to life. But what ends up happening is that all the kids try to bring back and bring an animal, like a dead pet, back to life when they hear how Victor did it. And what's great is that they're each an analog for one of the classic monsters, right? So if Frank and Weenie is obviously, well, his name's Sparky, that's obviously a Frankenstein allegory, but like there's a girl who tries to bring back a dead bat and it fuses with her cat and creates a vampire cat, so that's Dracula. There's a hamster, I think, that gets turned into a mummy. And then the Asian kid turns his turtle into Godzilla, so even though that's not the
more,
same.
It's closer to Gamera, actually.
Right, sure, actually.
Which has nothing to do with Godzilla.
But it's cool. It was a cool answer to it because I was watching them and I was like, okay, so they've done the mummy. They did Wolfman with, I think, a dog in it. Or no, it was a rat. A rat was Wolfman. They do the creature from the Black Lagoon with sea monkeys.
Yeah. I was going to ask what you thought that was, whether you thought it was like a nod to Gremlins, maybe.
It's very Gremlin-esque, but surely it's Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Well, because, the design of it. Yeah. And it's also, I mean, they're all kind of a mix of a few things as well.
Yeah.
Because it has like elements of the birds as well when they're in the phone booth and they're all like trying to get onto them. Yeah.
So I was like, well, what's left and what is this guy going to do? And he makes what are they called?
Kaiju.
Yeah, Koju. And I was like, oh, of course, because he's the Japanese character. It's a great way to, it's a stroke of genius to do it that way.
Yeah, there's so many clever little bits in it. Like there's a part where Sparky's been brought back to life and he's sniffing around the fence and the neighbor's dog is there and it's this black poodle. And they sort of have a moment where they're like sniffing each other, not quite sure. And then she gets an electric shock from Sparky and it causes her to get the Frankenstein's bride white streaks through the poodle's hair. It's so great.
Which was also in the live action version but felt a lot more earned in the feature film. And what was very eerie I thought about the feature film is that it's like theme, its message is very much like commenting on how people don't believe in science anymore. Like there's a science teacher who gets fired because all the parents are worried about their kids being so obsessed with science, and he stands up in front of them and he's like, you're actually all stupid. It's like, you're all ignorant. Did I say that right? No, you are stupid. And he talks about how science is like one of the best things that humans have managed to be able to work out and study, and he gets fired for it because everyone's afraid of it. And then when he talks to Victor, he says, you can use science for good or you can use science for bad, which is essentially what ends up happening in the end of the film. But in an age where people are anti-vax and not wanting to wear their face masks during a pandemic, it felt strangely prescient to see a movie about a society rejecting, these scientific leaps forward. So that was cool. And also he says you can use science for good or science for bad, and they end up kind of saving the day through using science for good. So they kill the sea monkeys through giving them popcorn because they're fresh water and the popcorn is salt. And so it's things like that end up saving the day. And then it has the same ending as the short film. But what do you guys think about the differences, the comparisons?
Well,
I
just love how Tim Burton's style translates so well into stop motion. And like if he was literally just like a stop motion director, like he'd probably be way more respected. Because this is kind of like his last like successful or I guess good film, if you will.
Well received.
I mean, he did Big Eyes in 2014, which no one really saw, but was quite good. And then he did that Home for Peculiar Children and Dumbo, which have both not done too well. But yeah, the character designs are all so great. There's his classmate, the one with the cat, which just has these gigantic eyes and is like such a funnily designed character. And so is her her cat, but she's also in the live action film. That character's played by Sofia Coppola from The Godfather.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. There's sort of a overweight female neighbor in the short film whose model was just used for the stop motion one, which is funny. But I think this is, and we'll maybe move on to the next film after this, but I think this is kind of the dream result of this process. It's a short film that's really good, and then a feature film which builds on in a very organic way that doesn't feel like it's overstuffed, which is maybe something we saw with Cargo, was that the idea was ruined by putting more into it. And this is ignoring the medium change and the year difference, you know, the weight between them. But I mean, maybe that's what it needs, because clearly he thought about this story for nearly 30 years before remaking it.
I think the medium change is really what makes it successful. Because I don't know about you guys, but I found Sparky so charming as a character, and something that I felt the live action version didn't have is because Tim Burton's models of people in his stop animation films, like Corpse Bride and stuff, I feel them, like, you know, they're like a little bit stilted and not as, they don't show as much emotion as the animal characters. And so, like, you watch it for Sparky. He's the one that really, like, gets in your heart.
There's things like just the effects are done better, because when you've got a real dog, there's only so much you can do to make it look like it's an undead dog. And there's a part where it like drinks and there's clearly like sprinkler attached to its collar and it spurts out. Whereas in the the stop motion version, they pull that off a lot better, and he has like bits and pieces falling off him and stuff, which you obviously wouldn't be able to do with the.
Yeah, there is also I'm not sure like how it actually relates to it, but on Disney Plus, there's like another short that's related to it.
Really?
Called when you search Frankenweenie, and like it's presumably just like an interstitial they put on.
How long is it
on Disney Channel? Let's have a look. Because it's, Captain Sparky versus the Flying Saucers, and it's 2 minutes long.
Should we watch it?
Oh, that's the short film they make. I did also watch Vincent, which is Tim Burton's first stop motion film, which is very fun. You should check that out if you haven't seen it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool. Okay, so let's look at maybe a less successful adaptation in Lights Out, which is kind of there's a video by the YouTube channel Now You See It, which sort of brought attention to this very concept of adapting a short film for a feature film a few years back, where he compared a sort of the main scene from the very short film. It's about two and a half minutes, and how it was replicated in the feature film, and basically analyzed why the short film version is way scarier. So let's backtrack. Let's talk about what is Lights Out about.
So Lights Out, really at its heart, it's about mental illness. And we'll get to that in a moment. Anyway, the short film is essentially just like a woman is getting ready for bed. When she flicks off the light, she can see a shadowy figure in the hallway. When she flicks it back on, it disappears. And she does this a few times, gets into bed.
It suddenly becomes closer as well.
And so she gets into bed scared, and then she hears something. And then she looks, and there's this demonic woman standing by her bedside table lamp, and she turns it off, and it's very short and to the point, and it's very clearly made for zero budget. You could make this with your mates on the weekend. And then the feature film fleshes this out, where you've got Yeah, it's like a family drama, and it's revealed that like the demonic woman is this woman who was killed in a mental asylum, and now she like haunts the shadows. Mm. Yeah.
So what was interesting about this film is that this was back in the mid 2010s, when things like It Follows and The Babadook, which we'll talk about shortly, and even Get Out were kind of like making a name as like the new horror, right?
It was horror that's about something.
Yeah. This was sort of roped in with that because it's new horror that's about something. That's
well, for me, it was roped in because I always get Lights Out and Don't Breathe confused.
So do I. And the titles, Lights Out, It Follows, Don't Breathe, Get Out, are all feel like they're playing the same game.
Yeah. You
know? Like these very blunt kind of
two
statements.
Words.
Yeah. And what I find interesting is that I thought Lights Out, the feature film, was pretty bad. I like the short film fine. I think I don't quite understand its internal logic. I don't understand how the demon can be turning the light off at the end if the whole point is that they can only exist in the darkness.
That's why the short film is so much better than the feature length, is because there's no reason behind it. We have no explanation. Yeah. There is zero context. Mm. This could happen to you. But through the feature film, you know, it was explained that, you know, Diana, who's the creepy woman that can't go on the light, you know, she's attached to the mother. And so it's like a very specific situation where this has happened and this is why she's like haunting this family. Yeah. So that's why you come away less scared, is because it's not something that you're like, holy shit, like imagine if this happened to you.
It sounds to me like you're putting the logic of the film onto the short film and saying that's why it doesn't work, because you're like, well, she can't appear in the light because in the movie she gets like burned when she's in the light, but we're not told that in the short film. In the short film, we just know that this character can travel invisibly when it's light is kind of what you're showing. It's only visible in the darkness. We don't know that it's not something that it has. It could have control over. It could turn that on and off.
You're right.
Like that's why the short film, I think, is amazing. Mm. That it's like, it's just get in, get out, introduce like a cool idea for a fright, and then do it, and then that's it.
Yeah, it's almost it's when you ask what's Lights Out about, and you're like, oh, it's a creature that can only move in the darkness. The short film is just a 2-minute explanation of that. And you watch it and you're like, well, I don't really need any more, because nothing in the feature film even seems to attempt, you know, there's no like set pieces or moments in the feature film that feel like they're trying to find other cool ways to demonstrate that central premise. So the short film is just sort of this pure thing that, I don't think it's not like Cargo, where it's like this is too perfect as a short film that you shouldn't even attempt it as a feature film. But I do think that like there exists a way to make a feature film version of Lights Out that's better than the one we've got.
Yeah, I think it's such a great idea for a monster, and like it's such a scary idea as well, that like turning off the lights is scary, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those
and
things.
The like I mentioned before, I love the low budget feel of the short. And then the low budget feel is kind of carried over to the film, but only sometimes, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Cause in like the film, so it's the silhouette, but it has these like you can see like light in its eyes. And the
kind
way
of
that
like
was,
when you see like a cat or a sheep at night.
Yeah.
It has the reflective.
The way that was done was like, it was literally just someone who was like wearing all black and like painted black, but they had little bits of reflective tape on their eyelids, and then just off screen they shot an iPhone light and it reflected the light. Like David F. Sandberg is very open and honest about like
his
experience called Pony Smasher, his YouTube channel. You should check it out, because he does like talk about, and especially like with his experience with Shazam, about like test screenings and like talking about film criticism and what it means to be a director, and he gets like brutally honest about stuff like that. And he's one of those people similar to like Robert Rodriguez, who, you know, made a lot of stuff for no budget and has taken and has brought that sensibility over to big budget.
Yeah, exactly. So the Lights Out feature film has not too shabby of a Rotten Tomatoes score, which I think has just got 76, which I think is because what's good about the short film is preserved in the feature film. And everything else is kind of shitty. And so it's like it gets so far on the good faith of its original premise. But spoilers for Lights Out, the most disturbing thing I think about this film is that the ending of it is the way they defeat the monster is the mother, the very mentally unwell mother, with whom the monster is attached to. They defeat it by she kills herself. She shoots herself in the head because the monster cannot exist without the mother, which is a very troubling message to put forward, because
solution to the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. You like the film, and it's not like it's just a dumb, there wasn't any thought behind it, because the film is very clearly intelligent enough to say the monster is a metaphor for mental illness. The monster is a metaphor for how if you don't deal with your mental illness, it can ruin your life and your family's life. That's what the monster is. In the same way that the monster in It Follows is an STD, the monster in Lights Out is mental illness and not dealing with it. And so it's smart enough to set up the metaphor, but then to say the solution to that is to kill yourself so you won't be a burden on your family might be one of the worst endings I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, because it's literally like, she goes, like she realizes everyone's life is worse because of my mental illness, and this is the only way to combat that.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
It's fucked up because it's like, you even if that's the ending you land on, you could still maybe paint that as more of a tragic ending, but it's not. They don't really care that the mum dies either. The last scene is them sitting in the ambulance and they're like, oh, thank God we're safe now. And it's like, your fucking mum just died, dude.
Yeah.
And like, but also,
no, but they're happy because they don't have to deal with their fucking depression anymore. Fucking crazy bitch.
Like, how much better would this film have been if it was more about banding together and looking after someone?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like the mother finally feels the support that, you know, and she's
that she
able
has
to,
someone that she can rely on.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, she's Diana would be feeding off like her negative energy and her kind of like self view, but it's like, no, yeah, like it should be that you work together to defeat Diana.
Yeah, and because it feels like the first half of the movie was not written, but like consulted with an expert, like a psychologist or something on it, and then someone else just picked up the ending and was like, I can do this, and didn't pick up on the metaphor at all and was like, wait, what about this?
Yeah, well, because there was an expert involved in the first half of the film, right at the start, when you've got expert of acting Billy Burke plays the father in the opening scene. Billy Burke, of course, famous for playing Charlie Swan in Twilight. He's kind of the one,
the
that,
best
like,
film character of all time.
Yeah, he's the one that discovers the monster and encounters it for the first time, and does not live to tell the tale.
Yeah, he dies before the opening credits, and I was like, when Billy Burke showed up in that intro scene, I was like, oh shit, is Billy Burke the protagonist in this film? And I was so excited, and I was so ready to see Billy Burke be the main character, only to very then quickly realize, oh, he's gonna die. That's the point of this character.
Yeah.
So this is a case of absolutely fudging the bucket, you know? Like, this is taking your idea, your short film that has been greenlit for a feature, and just finding like the worst way to do it almost.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't like it. You guys didn't like it either?
Yeah.
I enjoyed watching it, I feel, but that's just because I like scary movies, I think.
Yeah, the end definitely ruins it, and I was kind of enjoying it up until that point. Like, there is a lot of cool stuff in it, and I think, like I said a few times, that it's such a great idea, and it's such a easy to pull off, but clever, but terrifying, you know? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. Okay, well, the last film we've got to talk about here is The Babadook, Jennifer Kent's directorial debut. It's an Australian film based on, her, as I said, her 2005 short film.
How did she direct a short film in 2005 if she didn't have her debut until 2012 or whenever?
Oh, no.
2014.
What is The Babadook about?
AJ, do you want to take this one?
Sure. So both Monster and The Babadook are essentially about a single mother. The husband has died off screen, like before the film. And she has a maybe 7-year-old son who has a very overactive imagination and believes that there is a monster in the house. And that's about as far as the short film goes. The feature film adds more to this, and she finds the storybook that just turns up at her house called Mr. Babadook, and she starts to read it to her son, only to discover it's like this very violent, scary story about a man in a top hat who's going to come and kill you. And he gets really scared, and it like clearly traumatizes him. And this is after he's been kicked out of school for, you know, bringing weapons to school and things like that, like makeshift weapons that I wouldn't even know how to make, and somehow the 7-year-old knows how to make.
Alexander
these, like,
Jones, known weapons expert.
Yeah.
Even he would not know how to make them.
Whatever, I'm saying the age difference.
Famously violent podcast host.
So essentially, it's the mother then coming to terms with the fact that the Babadook is a real thing, and the climax of the film is it sort of infects the household, and they've together got to try and defeat the Babadook and stay together as a family.
Yeah.
And the metaphor here is similar to Lights Out, but it's more, I think the Babadook is supposed to represent grief.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to represent how you control and manage your grief after a traumatic event happens. In this case, the father dying. In the short film, I think the idea of the short film is like the log line, or like the hook is like, what if the mother of a scared child ends up taming the monster under the bed? Because both the short film and the feature film end with she keeps the monster and she feeds it and she's in control of it. And in the movie, it carries a lot more weight, and she gives it like a bowl of worms and it tries to attack her, but she remains staunch and things. But in the short film, she like leaves a glass of milk next to the closet and it reaches out and grabs it. And I think the short film has none of the subtext of grief or anything in it.
Well, I think it probably is. It's maybe not as clear in the text, but I could see that being part of it when she went to it. Because I think the ending, like you say, of it's like the monster's still there. And I think that's kind of the thing about grief, is that you can't expect that it's like, you know, your husband dies and one day you're just going to get over it. You're just never going to think about it again. It's like,
which is what the characters in the film expect of her.
And it's like, no, like it will always be a part of you. But it's about letting it not get the better of you. And because it is like, I mean, obviously that's like a horrifying thing to hear if something's just happened to you. That's traumatic. That's like, yeah, you're like, you know what? You'll actually never get over it. But it's like you, it's kind of more realistic. It's more about like, the goal is to deal with it, not to make it go away.
So I'd seen this a couple of times before, the feature film. I'd never seen the short film. What did you guys, and I really like The Babadook. I think it's like a close to perfect film. I think it's probably the best example, maybe next to Get Out, of like this new
metaphora.
Social thriller. Metaphora. I think, one of the best examples of that. What do you guys think of it?
Yeah, I hadn't seen it before, but I'd always been told it was very scary, and so I didn't watch it.
So that's what you thought of it?
Oh, I didn't watch it. That's what I said. it was good. Jess?
Very good. I had seen this before with my mate Imogen. We're like horror movie buddies.
Shout out to Imogen.
Shout out to Imogen, who does not listen to this podcast.
Do you think Imogen would like me?
Haven't you met her?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you have, man.
I've lived in Auckland for a long time. How many of your friends I met?
Nah, she's cool. Yeah, and it was, very, very, very good.
Yeah. I find the because it's so close to New Zealand accent, I do find the Australian accent distracting.
Like, especially when they say it, because, I don't know, for us, we're very lazy, so we're like, Babadook. Yeah. But it's like, Babadook?
Yeah, the Babadook.
The Babadook.
It's the Babadook, Mum!
Yeah. Oh my God, the fucking kid, though!
Yeah.
Holy shit!
Is
this the most annoying kid to ever be in a film that you would still consider good?
God, yeah. That's the true horrific part of this. It's like fucking never having children, man.
Yeah, it's like the Babadook's log line is like, a mother deals with the fact that her son is just an annoying little shit.
He's an annoying kid.
But yeah, because I didn't realize that this was what the "why can't you just be normal" cut to, like, screaming was from. And I was like, oh my God, when it happened. I was so excited.
Yeah. So it's very intense, but what do you guys think of the differences between the 2005 short and the feature film? Any observations there?
Yeah, well, I think what am I trying to say? I don't know. My brain just fell out of my asshole.
I'll build on that.
Please, I'm so tired.
Well, because in the last time we did this episode, we talked about like that. So say like Cargo was clearly like you just had an idea for a short film, and someone was like, "Oh, make that into a feature," and they like didn't really know what to do. Whereas something like Yes God Yes and Whiplash felt more like just a scene out of a feature script. Whereas like I think Lights Out was kind of like, oh, this was a cool idea. I can easily extrapolate into a movie. Arguable about how well they did it, and you know, definitely you could make quite a good horror film with that. That doesn't have all these nasty messages. Monster's kind of a weird one because it feels like there's so much subtext. Like, but based on what Babadook ended up being, it feels like there was all the subtext that was supposed to be in the original in Monster that she just, like, didn't have time to put in there.
But you can, like, almost tangible. Mm. And, I really get what you're saying. Like, with Frank and Weenie and Lights Out, it kind of feels like, okay, yeah, this was the short film. Here's another plot point that we can dump in it to fill out the runtime. But with Babadook, it feels like, no, it's the short film, but just stretch it out and almost not really anything of substance is put in, but everything else that was kind of very, very subtext in the short film sort of comes to light.
It has time to
develop. Yeah, and it's,
that's a good
yeah.
point, because the stuff that elongates something like Frank and Weenie are like tangible plot points. Like, there is a science fair and there are other monsters, and it's, oh, there's the Invisible Man in Frank and Weenie as well as the fish.
Yes. Oh my God. And, such a clever film.
it's tangible. It's specific plot beats, whereas Babadook is like, there's nothing tangible that elongates the plot. It's just a lot more slow brooding, which is why I think actually that the short film is what I said before, that it's more just like, here's a funny idea that like that you would own the monster in your closet,
right? Yeah,
and
yeah.
then after 9 years of that gestating in Jennifer Kent's mind, she was maybe like, how can I put more into this? And maybe this, I think maybe the subtext came after.
Interesting, because I feel like it's more like film. Yeah, because this was her directorial debut, Monster, that it was kind of like she had in the back of her mind, it was like, oh, I have this idea for a film, it explores grief, that have a monster that represents grief, and then she got like a little bit of money to make a short film, and she was like, well, I might never have a chance to make this. And so she was like, okay, this is the only idea I'm passionate about, and then made it. But it's the result of that is it kind of feels like you're just watching the Babadook on fast forward. Like, it just moves from, because you said, it's like Babadook is just Monster, but slower.
More ominous.
Yeah. And so it's like, I think she probably did have these ideas in there because all the elements are there. It's just, we don't have time to explore them in the story.
Well, we may never know what the truth was, unless it's written on Wikipedia. Let me just quickly do a little skim. The Babadook is gay. Okay, that's in here.
A Tumblr
user virally joked that the Babadook was openly gay.
cool.
All right.
That's all that's in here. Jennifer Kent said she loved the meme and said, I think it's crazy that the meme just kept him alive. I thought, you bastard. He doesn't want to die, so he's finding a way to become relevant. Oh, that's scary.
Jesus.
this isn't necessarily talking about the differences between the short film and the feature film, but I do really like how the mythology around the Babadook as a character, because I like seeing a scary storybook that you were read and gave you nightmares as a kid feels like such a relatable concept. Do you guys have that in your life?
Yeah, I've literally, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. There was a book called Beyond the Deep Woods that had illustrations in it, and there is this one monster called the Gloam Glozer, and it fucking terrified me as a kid. Horrific.
Yeah, I think of like there's a monster at the end of this book, the Sesame Street book. That freaked me out. And it's cool how silly the Babadook looks in real life. And so like right from the start, it's like, yep, it looks silly. Sorry, you're going to have to still be scared by it.
Because
I think this film is very scary.
Having something like Audible related to it as well, like the thing with the Babadook.
Nope.
Yeah, and it's the sound of someone knocking on your door.
Yeah.
It's supposed
to be. I like that it's like, because that was kind of having not seen the film, but knowing what the character looked like, knowing what the name is, and knowing that like dook 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 was like a thing in the film. I always thought that was like part of the joke, is that like, he's silly, but he's scary. Like, you know, and it's kind of like it's one of those interesting exercises where it's like, what's the dumbest thing I can make scary?
But it's one of those things that as a kid you do find things scary.
That it's like this character design you could imagine was made for children. But it's like, it's terrifying though.
Gotta top that.
Yeah. I love the opening line of the book is like, if it's in a word and if it's in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. Because it's supposed to be like it possesses her at the end because she lets it in. As her son is telling her not to do. There's a lot of like, having seen when I first saw it, I was like, that was pretty good. And every time I've seen it since, I've been like, man, this is so, got so much in it. It's so rich. And I really enjoy it. Cool. Well, hey, that probably brings us to the end of this discussion.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any final
talk about there's something I observed on the Frank and Weenie Wikipedia page. So this is the full thing. So this is talk about there was a traveling exhibition that went into the work and creating the film. During the exhibition, it was possible to see sets and characters that were used for the stop motion feature film, a sequel to Corpse Bride. The sentence ends there. There's no full stop. Someone just stopped writing. And then the following sentence is, from September 14, 2012 to November 5, 2012. There's no R on it. It's like, who the fuck's writing this page?
This is like seeing a shooting star, like a shoddily edited Wikipedia page. You don't always see this shit.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's fun. That's a bit of dumb Wikipedia trivia. But yeah, cool. I really enjoyed doing this, and I would love to keep doing the occasional short films versus their feature film adaptations if we can keep finding ways to theme it. A lot of Taika's films are based on short films, so we could do Taika Waititi short films versus their feature. At least Boy and What We Do in the Shadows are based on short films. Yeah. I'm not sure about any of the others, but we can find out together and talk about them.
All right.
Cool.
So what do you guys think is the best adaptation
that we've seen so far? I think Babadook's the best movie. I think Frank and Weenie is the most impressive.
Yeah, change.
Like the art of adapting is the most impressive.
I think Frank and Weenie is my favourite movie and adaptation out of this lot.
Richard?
I agree, Frank and Weenie.
Nice. Very, very nice.
All right, what a fucking tight little tidy episode of the Cult Pop Shop podcast.
Sparky.
That's how tight it is. That was gross.
You have to end on that.
All right.
So thank you for listening. Yeah. And if you liked this episode, then please be sure to check out all the other Cult Pop Shop stuff. The episodes are usually maybe about 20 minutes to an hour long into this. But that's okay. This is a quick little Halloween bite. And the amount of times we do 2.5 hour episodes, it's like you can have a 50-minute episode, okay?
Yeah.
we have lives too. And they almost exclusively revolve around editing a podcast. So you can like Cult Popture on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and follow and subscribe to us on YouTube and all those places. We're currently going by Occult Popture on various... I think it's just Twitter, actually, which we've done every Halloween for 3 years. And I'm like, man, do we need to... do we need to come up with another... pun? Can we, are you allowed to use the same Halloween name?
Well, see us in 3 years to see if we thought of one, and what is happening with the New Zealand election cycle.
Yes, true. Very excited to see how that turns out. And you can also join our Discord, which there'll be a link to in the show notes, and you can donate to us on Patreon, patreon.com/cultpopshire, if you want to hear some more. We're talking about doing some more creepypasta stuff that'll be Patreon exclusive.
Bye.
You can also... Wait, there was one other thing. What was it?
Happy Halloween.
Just fade in the music.
Post-credit scene, which is coming up right now.
You just delayed it happening.
See you later, everybody, and thank you for joining us. Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, welcome to the post-credits scene. This is a sequence at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more on our Patreon, you get to give us something to talk about, something to play, something to do, something to just whet your little appetites on in the time between when the episode stopped and the music kept playing.
Really,
I think it's a good concept for a segment on our podcast.
Yeah,
I think a post-credit scene is a very funny, very witty title to give it, despite the fact that we don't technically have credits in the episode. Anyway, today's post-credit scene comes to us from Sam Page on the Patreon, and he asks, "What is a disturbing film that you regret watching?" I have seen Salo, or 120 Days of Sodom. I don't know if I regret watching it, though, because I watched it with a bunch of friends and we kind of all held hands and because Salo's actually considered like an art house film, right? It's not considered.
Yeah, it's in my book of 1001 movies to watch before you die.
There you go. It's actually like a prestigious film that is good. It's not like just gross for gross sakes, and so we wanted to like experience that, and so I don't regret watching that. What about you? Do you regret watching any films?
No, Thomas, nasty question. No, I don't. And that's on it. I mean, I haven't watched any of like a Serbian film or any of those kind of like classic answers that people would, or Martyrs, I think, is one.
Yeah, I don't know if a Serbian film is like a Serbian film, unlike Salo, is not considered like a work of high art, though.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't want to watch it.
Yeah. I don't think that was in dispute, but.
You said.
but you know, like those classic disturbing films that, you know, that are Cannibal Holocaust, you know, these films that are known for being disturbing and people regretting watching them. I can't think of one that I've seen that would fall into that category. Maybe if I watched some of those, I would. But yeah, regret watching is a tough word because I'm very much a proponent of like, You shouldn't really have an opinion on a film if you haven't watched it. You shouldn't try and say like, no, this film is XYZ if you haven't actually seen it, and seeing it means watching the whole thing as well. Even like one of those horrible movies, I would still be able to rest easy knowing that I can be like, yeah, it's fucking horrible. Like, but I've made my own mind up about it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I regret. I think I certainly watched films I thought were stupid, but it's like this is now assimilated into my pop cultural identity. So I would say I don't really regret watching. I regret watching certain porn videos.
Tell us about
That's my closest application of this question, I think. We've all been there, you know. You finish watching something and you're like, oh, wish I didn't see that.
Like what?
I've seen Two Girls, One Cup. That's my answer.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen Two Girls, One Cup. It was not something I watched voluntarily, and it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But that's my answer. My answer is Two Girls, One Cup.
Yeah, see, I don't know that I regret watching that because...
It was fucking hot.
Because now, you know, I have an opinion on it and I can...
I would just rather I didn't see it, I guess. And that's what else is regret if I wish that you didn't see it, you know?
Yeah. It's also only a trailer for a film as well.
It's also, this will put your mind at ease for anyone else who's seen it. It's also fake shit that they eat. You do see her actually shit into a cup, but they're not then eating the shit, apparently. Right. It's like a prop. So.
Still enough for those coprophiles.
Rest easy. What is a cop? Isn't that someone who likes The Godfather?
That's a coprophile.
Oh, sorry.
Coprophile or coprophilia is being into poop.
I thought it was like scat.
Yeah, it is. Scatological.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.